This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net.
911, what are you reporting?
We got someone or something crawling around out here.
Did you see what it was? Was it a person or an animal? Or
I can't tell. All I know is that my sensor light came on, and I just happened to glimpse and see this thing running across the yard. A good-sized man or something that looks like a man. I don't know what it was, just that it ran across the yard. Whatever it is, it's running. I couldn't catch it if I was going to chase it. Jesus Christ, you better...
Sure.
See ya.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Is he in your yard, sir?
Yeah, God, he's big.
Okay, what's he doing in your yard?
He's looking at me.
Okay. And the guy is on foot?
It's a big, real big person, that's all I can say.
Okay, but it is a person.
Yeah, I'd say it was a person, somebody really big, but he's all in black.
Is he a black male or a white male? Did you actually see whether, or was he just wearing black?
He's all black and he's big. He is big.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. This is Strange Harbor.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
And the strange, and the untested, and the unavailable.
Hey, Billy's back. Good to have you back, Bill.
Yeah, it's nice to be back. You know, sorry I missed so many weeks with the illness, but...
Did you have the coronavirus?
I did not have the coronavirus.
Okay.
And I went to the doctor yesterday, and she said no.
That's not good.
What you have, so...
Well, our guest today, returning, is our friend Mary Joyce from SkyshipsOverCashiers.com. And Mary, welcome back to the show.
Always good to talk to you two.
Do you know anything about this coronavirus stuff?
Yeah, I had a hunch that might be something you would be interested in, since you're right in the hot spot in the country. In fact, I just saw a few minutes ago that there's been a 10th person who's died in Washington State. So you guys really... It seems like you've been targeted almost.
We're ground zero. Ground zero.
And what I thought your listeners would find interesting is that we've gotten information on the coronavirus from a man who has cosmic top secret security clearance since the middle 1980s. He advanced from the military to security for the Department of State to the umbrella organization that appears to control everything, typically called the Cabal. And we met him, and I say we because there's another person who owns this website with me. It's Evelyn Gordon. So that's the we, if I make a reference like that. And we were contacted by him in 2016 about a story that's totally, unclassified. It wasn't secretive at all. But it was an interesting story. We went to his property and met with him, and he's in an adjoining state to where I live. That was in 2016. In 2017, he appeared at a restaurant in the little town where I live, called me up and asked if we would come and meet him. And we had this discussion and chatted for a while. We were back in a corner. He started drawing stuff out on a napkin. I'm going to just quote this from our own article. It said, after a year of checking on us on our website, he had decided he could trust us. So he'd been investigating us for about a year. More importantly, he was concerned with what was happening in the world and had decided that it was going to take whistleblowers to get the truth to the public. So that's back in 2017. And we've had contact with him several times, but with the coronavirus, he's gotten back in touch again. And we've done two articles based on his information. One is called Coronavirus Created in the Laboratory, and the other one is Coronavirus Whistleblowers Protection Advice. So those are two different sections of this same story that he shared with us.
Now, you know, we don't want to create a panic or anything, but I was always wondering about this whole coronavirus, if it was, deliberately made or deliberately released or anything. Do we have information on that?
Again, he's coming from quite a background. That's why, I like to use his words as much as possible. And he did give us very specific ways that people can protect themselves. And we certainly will, you know, go through that for your listeners, since I'm sure they're, in fact, everybody in the country is interested in this topic. He said that the, let me see, I can quote him on this. The coronavirus is a manufactured disease taken from animals and made into a human disease. This is done so vaccines can be made that might respond to an outbreak of something similar. He said it was the virus was created in, they called it BSL-4 laboratory. It stands for Biological Safety Level 4. And that was in the Western Hemisphere. And then it was shipped to a similar BSL-4 facility in Wuhan, China, which is the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And from there, it was released on the public. And to emphasize the importance of these BSL labs, they deal with highly dangerous and exotic microbes that are frequently fatal. And two of the best known produced from these labs is Ebola and SARS.
Wow. So what can we do to protect ourselves?
Well, I was real glad that he contacted us again with very specific things that might be helpful to people. It might be worth it if I just kind of went through the points. And these are all quotes from him, and I put it in, like, bullet form on our website. So if people want to, you know, see it for themselves, go to skyshipsovercashers.com. And on the homepage, on the right-hand side, we have a column which are the most recent postings that we've done on the website, and those are in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 top listings on that page. You just click on that and you can find all of this for yourself. But we are dealing with the radio, and beyond the obvious, you know, he obviously said wash hands every 10 minutes and avoid touching your face if you are in an active area. Second point, avoid medical facilities unless absolutely necessary. Should any person believe he is infected, go to a facility where for testing, wear a mask, wash hands like a maniac, and then self-quarantine. Third point, if at all possible, avoid public transportation, buses, airplanes, cruise ships, and recent international travelers. And that's probably what's gotten people on the West Coast in trouble, are the people coming in from travels abroad.
Right.
He said that the virus was designed to target certain demographic groups, so he said it was best to avoid tawdry places where drug addicts, prostitutes, and gangs might hang out. However, the virus, he said, already has and is mutating. Now, here's some very specific information beyond the obvious of washing hands and, you know, not touching your face. He said olive leaf, which is a natural supplement, is a powerful ingredient to significantly decrease the virus if it enters the body. The combination of olive leaf and oregano oil can be significant. Now, I'll interject for myself here. I have kept oregano oil here at the house for years, and I have managed to never get a cold or a flu. I think the last time I got anything was in 1999. And so the first sign of anything, I've been taking oregano oil. But he says the olive leaf is very important in this particular virus. So that combination is what he would highly recommend. He said use comfrey salve externally, like you would apply old-timey Vicks VapoRub. And this might surprise people. He said hand sanitizers will not do anything against the virus. They might even work against people if they use them instead of washing their hands. As far as masks are concerned, I think they're really hard to come by. But if you get them, he said a mask rated N95 is what we consider a minimal protection mask to wear in a suspected area. One rated a P95 is better. One rated a P100 is the best. And he said, in an active, infected area, one needs a mask that seals on all sides and filters very small particulate. This means it must fit tightly and thus be a bit uncomfortable to wear. I'm almost done with his advice. He said, for men, no mask will do any good against the virus unless you are clean shaven. This is not a good time for beards. Males are one of the primary demographics being targeted. Second to the last point, eye coverings such as ski goggles also would be necessary in an infected area. And finally, this one makes you shudder just a little bit. He said, one can bet that if the virus vaccine is released, it would be filled with all sorts of nasty stuff. So that's coming from our guy with the cosmic top secret clearance.
Right. Now, did he elaborate on, like, why men would be targeted in this?
He did not.
Oh, okay.
He did not. But it looks like they're doing something like what was probably intended when the HIV was introduced, and that was aimed at, like, drug addicts and gay communities. And so when he's saying avoid tawdry places, there may still be that mindset of, you know, wiping out those kind of people.
Right, right. Wow.
It's a whole big nasty stuff, but this guy has proven to be correct so many times that I'm not about to just blow away what he says.
Right, right. Bill, do you got anything?
Do you think that it's being deliberately transferred to certain people?
Yeah, I do. I think it was deliberately released in China, the city Wuhan that was, you know, essentially shut down totally.
Right.
I think there may be a bit of an experiment going on here to track things and see how they travel and how they move about. Because in many respects, this is not as deadly as some of the viruses that these labs have created in the past. So it might be like a test operation just to see what happens. The way it's been popping up, I don't know if it's been deliberately dropped in other places. It does seem that the link seems to be the international travelers. So I guess we'll go with that, at least for the time being.
Well, that sounds reasonable if they're coming in from an infected place. I heard there was a couple more cruise ships that reported cases. One that's currently anchored off the coast of California has had some additional cases. So,
yeah, and I don't know what's right about that, because the ship that was off of Japan for so long, it just seemed like that became a petri dish for the virus to just hatch all over the place.
Sure.
So I don't know if that's the best thing to do, but I can also understand why they would want to keep them, you know, in one spot. It's just a mess, actually.
It is. You know, on those ships, when you have, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 people on the ship at any given time, you know, plus the crew.
Well, I feel sorry for the crew and for anybody who has those lower rooms where they don't have any windows.
Right, yeah.
To be confined into one of those would be, like, worse than isolation in a prison, I think, because those rooms are so small.
Yeah, and without a window, it's kind of claustrophobic.
Yes, absolutely.
Could this be like a New World Order kind of thing, where the one world government is doing this kind of stuff, or in your opinion?
Well, the original story that this whistleblower gave us, the one after he checked us out for a year before he shared it with us, had everything to do with the international cabal. And I can give you that kind of information if that's something you're interested in. That's totally up to you.
Sure, sure. Cabal us away.
Yeah.
Cabal us away. All right. He described it like a pyramid. He said the bottom tier would be the alphabet soup agencies like the CIA and the NSA and political world leaders and the Mossad in Israel. But he said at the top of this pyramid, at the top of the tier, there are less than 70 people running it all. And despite all their power, he said they live in fear that the general public and the world will find out about them. If that were to happen, because there's so few of them, they could be, in deep trouble. And I know that he has described to me that many of these, the richest people in the world who are pulling all the strings, aren't the ones that run around in big limousines. They're the ones who, he said, typically would drive a Chevrolet, a Buick, something along those lines, and live in, just a medium-sized house. They do not flaunt their riches. He even said that he knows one who lives all the time in an Airstream trailer. And I said, you got to be kidding me. Why have all that money and choose to live like that? And he said, well, the money is endless, so whatever he wants to do or wherever he wants to go, He can do it, but he spends most of his life in an airstream so that nobody would have any idea the power that he maintains.
Wow.
And he said that top tier, they, let's see, what else? I'm trying to remember what else he said. He said it might be ridiculous, but he said he wasn't joking, that the top tier has negotiated a plan with a group of extraterrestrials. He said, I know people want to laugh when they hear this, but it's absolutely true. And that top tier gets a lot of its technology and their mind control methodology from ET group, an ET group. They have basically promised the cabal people that once the planet becomes theirs, that they will leave the cabal to run it. And he said that actually isn't true. They won't leave the cabal to run it. What they will do is exploit the planet, get all of its minerals and resources and slave labor, and the planet would essentially be turned into a gulag or a slave camp, and there wouldn't be any free people. He said the ETs would kill them because they know that those who turn on their own people cannot be trusted. And I want to interject that I am not one of those who thinks that all ETs are evil. I think we have the good, the bad, and the ugly just like we do among our humankind.
Right. Are these the same people that are having, like, those pilots, you know, spray the chemtrails? Are these different kind of institutions or different groups?
I'm sure that anything that's being done on a national or global scale, you better believe that the, quote, the cabal knows about it or is the instigator behind it. The chemtrails, that story's been around for so long, it's almost like old news, but it continues. Mm-hmm. And we had an area here in western North Carolina, and I truly do not know if this is continuing, but for a very long time, we had C-130s, those big bulky cargo planes that would fly low over an area around Cherokee, North Carolina, and other places. And in an area where they would repeatedly fly, there were a lot of people who were getting sick. So there seems to be a correlation with that. I know that there are those that are within the elite powers that see the world in very distant, cold eyes, and they see the problems from overpopulation. So I don't think they are adverse to reducing the population if it chooses to benefit them.
You know, I've always thought that there was an overpopulation problem, but it doesn't seem like many other people think that way also. Bill, what's your opinion on that?
I think there's a lot of people that think that.
Yeah?
Dan Brown wrote a book about it.
Yeah?
It's his book was about a guy that was going to set off a biological weapon to infect the world, and it would basically kill off about half the people.
Wow.
And this was because he felt the world was overpopulated. I think there's some truth to people that want to do that. Although I don't know who they are.
I would just think, you know, responsible reproduction would be a better solution than to just wiping people out.
Yeah, it would be. It would, obviously it would be, because, you know, you'd wipe out some of the greatest minds in history.
Yeah, thank you.
Accidentally. And, and it might even wipe out Johnny. And
right.
That would be a big loss. So.
He's one of a kind not to be cloned. Right?
That's right.
Right. Something like that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that... I think it's certainly worth consideration. Actually, I read books on overpopulation like in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a much bigger population now. You know, that was 40 years ago.
Wasn't there a book? I read something and the title was probably in that time period, The Population Bomb. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
I can't swear that's the name of the book, but it certainly was similar to that in title. And I agree with Johnny. There have got to be ways that we could encourage people to not reproduce so much. China has taken more extreme measures to do this. At one time, they were limiting one child per family. I think they may have increased it to two, but we don't have anything close to that in this country. And it's amazing what can be done with education. If we just did a national effort just to educate people that about the need to, you know, control the population, it would certainly help. And the Native American Indians were not known for having bukus of kids. They had natural herbs and things that they did that would limit the number of children that they would have. And so there are ways that you can do this. But of course, then you run into the very conservative people who are against any, even against birth control at all. So I don't know what you do with people like that.
And sometimes people, you know, that live in rural areas think there's lots of space, lots of land. But the problem is that all of that empty land we have can't sustain the population. It doesn't provide water or food or anything. So
yeah, I was out in South Dakota at the, and went specifically to the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. And yeah, there's a lot of land there, but
yeah,
it's land that is very hard to squeeze you know, products and in a livelihood out of it.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what you mean.
And that's the problem with overpopulation, is that we can't sustain all these people on the land that we have for producing food and clean water. And we also have to keep our air clean. The more people that are on this planet, the dirtier the air becomes. We breathe in the oxygen-nitrogen mixture, and we breathe out carbon dioxide. So in order to sustain a bigger population, we're going to have to come up with a way to scrub our environment, grow more food, produce more water. And scientists are working on that, but they don't have solutions.
There's answers to so many of the things that are stumbling blocks for us right now, and all we need to do is to have a more open approach from our government to allow some of these things to happen.
Yeah. Well, in China, they used to have a limit to how many children you could have.
And right. At one time, it was just one.
Yeah.
And now I think they can have two.
Yeah.
I'm not sure
and they have to get a permit in order to do that. They have to have approval. So it's that may be what it comes down to. I hope not. I think that it'd be better if we could just tell people, hey, just have one kid, leave it at that, maybe two, you know.
How dare you tell me what to do? How dare you? You evil person.
All right.
I'd be swinging it.
Then if we don't tell you what to do and you don't comply, then we'll make you do it.
Yeah, well, that's scary too.
Yes, but that's what happens, you know. It's people get these thoughts and ideas, and they want to force people to do things. And if the people don't respond, then they want to hurt them and lock them up and carry them away.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird and more coming up with Mary Joyce of Skyships Over Cashiers.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and we've been talking with Mary Joyce from SkyshipsOverCashiers.com. Now, I was looking on your website at some of the other stories, like the Navy sonar tech reporting underwater UFOs.
Yeah, that was kind of neat. I was actually at a Bigfoot conference because one of the other areas I'm interested in is Bigfoot. In fact, since I talked to you last I've got a new book called Bigfoot Beyond the Footprints, which I would be happy to tell you a little bit more about. But in the process, I met this gentleman who had been in the Navy, and I don't have the story in front of me, and I only retain minimal information after time has gone by. But he had served in the Navy, and on a number of occasions at night, they would see lights go underneath their ships, and the powers that be within the Navy told them to report them as a, what do you call it?
Anomaly?
What's the one where there's creatures in the ocean that give off a light?
Oh, I don't know.
And so they would blow it off as just that. But he said they were huge. And it was maybe five times that he had seen UFOs going under the ship or ships that he had been on. You know, it's not so amazing. People sometimes have tried to label them differently than UFOs, and they talk about, they give them different letters for being under the water. These ships are impervious to water or to air. They can zip in and out of water or in and out of air or in and out of a vacuum with no problem. So it's really one and the same. And there are many reports of underwater UFOs. There's been many seen off the West Coast, more Southern California. And they've, you know, we've actually at some point posted a photo of this underground entrance on the West Coast, and it's the same area where UFOs are seen coming and going from the water there.
I was watching some Neil deGrasse, what's that guy?
Tyson.
He kind of, you know, snickers about, you know, UFOs and, well, you know, if aliens are real, then, you know, how come we don't have any more information? It's always, you know, they're always landing at some small farmland and some trailer park or something. And what's your take on it?
We've made some progress in that regard, because there was a time, like back when Larry King still had his own talk show, where every time they had topics like UFOs discussed, they always had to have a debunker on at the same time. That is no longer the case. There are people who will talk about legitimate experiences with seeing UFOs or interacting with them, and we no longer have to endure the skeptics. And that's progress. I personally think that when somebody is so adamant about a subject like this, I think that they are just a voice for, I'll say government's very broad, but for a governmental effort to keep information away from the public. And I'm quite sick of everything being censored. And we get censored here, and I haven't been talking about this until very, very recently, but we posted like photos of two entrances into the Antarctica, and I put the coordinates there so anybody can look them up on Google Earth, and then within 2 days, it's like somebody spilled Indy ink on them, or, you know, the coordinates all of a sudden don't work. One that's been posted very recently is it's third from the top on the What's New on the homepage. It's simply called Photo Evidence of Mars Structure Cover-Up. And I use Google Earth every once in a while and just spend time scanning Mars or scanning the Earth or scanning Antarctica, just looking for anomalies that are very suspicious. And I found another one on Mars, and it looks like a structure. It is slightly blurry, but clearly there are very sharp perpendicular lines, and I have the photos from that. Again, within 2 days, I go back and look at it, and half of the image has been really blurred out, so you can no longer see anything. And the left hand of the same picture, it's like somebody took a strip. You can actually see it, like somebody cut a strip of photographic imagery and slapped it down on the left-hand side. So it's no longer possible for people to see what we had just posted 2 days before. So this kind of stuff is happening more and more, and they're not little structures. For example, the two entrances, which I do have photos of before they wiped them out, are big enough for our largest jets to fly into. I don't have the statistics on the top of my head, but one of our biggest jets could fly into one of these entrances and have 50 feet to spare off the each wingtip. So they're not little places. I suspect that the things that we find in post, either on Mars or in Antarctica, are probably still very active places, and that's why they don't want people to be able to in any way monitor what's going on there. Could be wrong about that, but that's my working theory.
Now, you were talking about Bigfoot.
You're up there on the west in Washington. There's a lot going on out there, and in fact, I've interviewed one of the founders of the Olympic Project, which is solely devoted to, tracking down Bigfoot. But over the years that we've had this website, I just kind of got tired of just hearing about the hoops and hollers and banging on trees with
right.
limbs and the footprints. You know, big deal. And so what I've done is I've talked to a lot of people, and I've taken a whole different approach with this book I've done. The Bigfoot have families, and we have people who've seen and even interacted with some of the families. The Bigfoot have developed friendships with some people. We did experiments with their preferences as far as, let's say, starting with food. They have their own language. They have their own biology. And I just wanted to present stuff in a way that isn't being covered very well, if at all. And any of the books that I've done, the four most recent books I've done, are all filled with lots of photos. We live in and many of them in color. We live in a world that's very visual. So like on the radio, you guys have to be really good at creating word pictures
mm-hmm.
because we're so visual. But this book, again, has lots of photos, and I truly try to write in a very concise and easy style because people are so busy that they don't want to wade. They want the information, but they want it boiled down, and they don't want to have to wade through, you know, thick gray books to find interesting information. In many ways, this book is like a coffee table book, but it's packed with stories that I think people would find very interesting.
Speaking of the Olympic Project, I'm a member of the Olympic Project, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
David Ellis?
Oh, yeah. He's been in the studio numerous times. He was actually supposed to come spend the weekend for the UFO Summit that we're doing this weekend, but he had something come up.
He provided us with some really great photos. People think that all Bigfoot have the same number of toes. Fingers.
Right.
And he sent us castings of baby Bigfoot prints that have six fingers rather than the five. And he showed us places where photos of where the young Bigfoot would go and play, and they would slide across wet grass, and then where they stopped, they would leave their footprint behind. He gave us some very interesting photos and very interesting information. Good. He seems to be a good guy.
Oh, yeah, and he's so thorough with his work, too. His audio is kind of his specialty, and, I mean, he just takes care of such detail with his audio especially. But he's a great guy.
Yeah, I'm glad you're able to get him on your show. I think that's terrific. And some of the audios that... I guess he's gotten them too, but I think of Ron Moorhead first when I think of the audio tapes. And Scott Nelson, who was in cryptology or something with the military for 30 years, I think.
A cryptolinguist, yeah.
Yes, and he's analyzed that, and I write about that in the book too, because there is definitely language.
And it's so great that someone discovered that. Can you imagine if Scott Nelson's son wasn't doing that book report and he didn't happen to be a cryptolinguist and stumble across that and be able to identify that, oh my gosh, there's a language in there, and then use his techniques that he's learned in the military to apply them to this to say, hey, and let you hear, oh, this is what they're saying, let me slow it down for you, and then you hear like a native language in there.
please try and talk to this.
The one that I think everybody ought to listen to, and I've got a link to it in my book, but off the top of my head, it's like samurai warrior sounds.
Samurai chatter, yeah.
And it really is very impressive.
Have you seen a Sasquatch yourself?
The closest I've come are two things. One of my stories is here in the western mountains of western North Carolina. One of the men who's grown up in this area took me up on a high ridge on private property, and we were on a gravel road, single road, and then we hiked about a half mile off of that road. He took me to a large cave where he said the Bigfoot hang out. It was I have pictures of it on the website and in my book. And it's approximately like 8 feet across and 5 feet tall. As we began to approach that area where the cave existed, we heard this like a bird call or a bird sound that didn't really sound like a bird. And then off in the direction where the cave existed, we heard like a reply, that same not quite a bird sound, and then everything went silent. And in my my gut feeling, and also the gentleman's feeling, was that one was signaling the other that here come some more annoying humans. In the same area, I did see footprints going up a very steep embankment. So that's one firsthand experience. Another firsthand experience, which I've had repeatedly, is seeing the footprints going up to a cave that's almost on a vertical cliff. I mean, you'd have to have mountain climbing gear to get up to where the cave is. And thanks to a zoom lens on my camera, I was able to get a picture of the cave. There's no way I was going to get up there. This continues to this day. We will find those footprints going from the direction of that cave down this deep embankment and cross a single lane gravel road. And oftentimes it goes over, especially in season, to where there's an apple tree. And anybody who's read anything about Bigfoot, you know they like apples. And I'll tell a story on myself. One day we found some really different scat or poop beneath this apple tree, and because there were footprints of a Bigfoot there, and because we'd seen that repeatedly, we sent off a sample of this unusual poop and had it processed at a DNA lab. Well, I wasted my money because, yes, it was different, but I think it ended up being like a wild fox or a wolf or something of that nature. And Then after that happened, I went to the Georgia Expedition Bigfoot Museum in North Georgia, right along the North Carolina border, and they had a sample of Bigfoot poop, and it was so large that if I had seen that before I did my little DNA send-off, I never would have sent it because it was really quite large.
And I hear that you almost have to have it like freshly excreted poop in order to be able to get DNA from it. Now, I could be mistaken on that.
I did twice. I sent things to a DNA lab. And the other time, we had a major story that had like every aspect of Bigfoot in it. In a nutshell, I was able to get a very large clump of Bigfoot hair, and I do show a photo of that in the book. Sent it off, but we didn't have any hair follicles. The thing that makes a Bigfoot unique is on the paternal side or the daddy side of the DNA,
mm-hmm.
and that is only found in the nuclear DNA. And with hair, you have to have the follicle in order to get that. Otherwise, all you get is what you call human DNA. Whatever makes the Bigfoot unique comes from the father side, which is an unknown species.
Yeah.
Nobody's been able to compare it to anything else.
Unknown primate. Yeah.
No, known primate, right. But this particular story, if anybody wants to look it up, it's again in my book, but you can also at least get part of the story by typing in Valley of the Bigfoot in our search bar on the homepage. Basically, it's in a very remote place. It's like in a little valley. It took like at least a mile to get down this single lane road that follows a creek, and then it opens up into a bowl-shaped valley. And there's two houses and a barn and a pond. Well, the people that owned the land were repairing the pond and using a jackhammer, and they suddenly went through the rock and into an open space, and all the water from the pond disappeared. After that is when they began to have trouble with the Bigfoot. And in hindsight, everybody has figured out that that flooded their underground cave, and they were pissed. And they went from messing with the people's vehicles, and their handprints would be all over them. They finally figured out a way to get inside. Their handprints were on the inside. The owner said that they kept upping their game. They even turned the ignition on. It didn't go anywhere, but the motor started. And from there, they began to invade the little house. And we had pictures of their handprints all over the door, like they're trying to figure out how to get in there. Their handprints were on the washing machine because the woman went to town, left it running, and they got in there and apparently were intrigued by the clothes tumbling in the washer that they could see through the glass. They did all sorts of stuff there. And then they invaded the big house. What was interesting is they did not really mess with the first floor, but they did with the second floor. And it got so bad that the people moved out of the house. But they had, they tore the toilet apart, and everybody was relieved that they didn't know what the toilet was for. They played with the toothpaste. They got into the children's bedrooms. They started taking things and making markers and marking on the walls. And I have pictures of the things that they did on the walls. We figured that it was the children because they had seen smaller creatures on the land, and most of the drawings were below the light switches. So we kind of figured the younger Bigfoot were entertaining themselves in that way. We have pictures of them trying to get into one of the bedrooms that the teenager had locked, and you can see these humongous scratch marks, like they had reached under the door and tried to pull the door open, and the scratch marks are, quite deep. But the story ended up being kind of good because we were sitting on the porch of the big house with the owner and talking about all these things, and she was saying out loud to us that she was sorry that they probably flooded the Bigfoot cave, and she was expressing all sorts of different kinds of regrets. And it's like the Bigfoot heard, because after that, they quit messing things around, and they actually left what appears to be a gift at the front door. It was like an old piece of burlap, roughly shaped into a little basket, and there were these old coins and some unknown little shiny object, and it was like a peace offering. And after that, they stopped being violent.
Wow.
That's
amazing. They understood that it wasn't intended.
Wow.
So we went from, you know, a situation that was scaring the people to death to, you know, kind of a sweet ending.
Well, Mary Joyce, that's about it for our time. We could sit here and talk to you for hours.
Yeah, we could go on and on. That was fascinating.
Well, like I said, the Bigfoot is, I hope people will get the book, especially those of you out in Washington State, because this really will present in an easy, absorbable way information that just simply is not being put out there in other books.
Would you be interested if we flew you in and wined you and dined you and give you a little money to come to the Sasquatch Summit and do a presentation this year in November?
Sounds like a plan to me, if you get the place all sterilized again.
Okay. I'll send you all the information and stuff, and we'll get you down here.
I would love it.
Well, thanks for spending time with us today.
It was good to talk to you, and Bill, I hope you feel better.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You guys are good guys. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, that was Mary Joyce, and Skyships Over Cashiers is her website. We have a link on strangeharbor.net. And before we wrap this up, Bill, anything you want to throw in there?
Well, you know, Bigfoot and UFOs always seem to be a good topic because there's tons of information. There's, even though we don't have concrete evidence, you know, we don't have a body, we don't have, a living being that we can look at, we have enough evidence that says there's something there. The same thing with UFOs. A lot of the sightings are bogus, but some of the sightings could be very, very real. So it's interesting to follow this, to hear different people talk about it, and people that have dedicated their lives to studying Bigfoot or UFOs and doing the research and sorting out the bogus stories from the real ones.
Well, it's good to have you back, homie.
Well, thanks. I'm not sure how long I can stay back, but it's nice to be back.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you'd like more information, you want to read some strange stories, if you want to yell at Bill for his New Age TUI, just log on to strangeharbor.net.
And stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.